it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Rongi, Amy Marks Kors, the Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it
also,
is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Ah, good morning, friends. How we doing?
Good morning.
Hey, what's up? Oh, that's a three. That's
I've
a three.
I've been told to bring it down.
Yeah, bring it down a bit.
I was excited for the show. Now I am pleasantly displeased.
Pleasantly displeased. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Rongi, good morning to you. Happy, happy Monday. It's a Bears Monday today, by the way. They play tonight. We're so excited that you're with us. So excited that you're with us today.
Also, congratulations to everyone. When I woke up this morning, it was 46 degrees.
God, I love it. Oh, just wait for it to become 95 again because it's happening at the end of the week. 314-436-7900. Join our show by calling and texting. You need to utilize the voice message feature on our Odyssey app. That's how you listen to this show live and the podcast later and all of that. So send us your voice messages. You have thoughts on whatever we're talking about, or if we directly ask you a question, we need you to answer it. You can use that. Also, if you want to watch us, you can do that on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at ChrisAmyKMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
A deal on a ceasefire could potentially be coming in Gaza. President Trump says so. So we will talk to Colonel Jeff McCausland, who has been on the station this morning. He's coming back in just a few minutes to visit with us.
And Dorian Johnson, the person that was with Michael Brown at his shooting in 2014, died on Sunday in a separate shooting in Ferguson. One person is in custody.
Cardinals beat the Giants. They win that series yesterday. The Chiefs lost to the Chargers in the opener on Friday night. Mizzou wins over Kansas in football. Fighting Illini in the top 10 in football. My gosh, there was so much sports happening over the weekend.
So much sports. You didn't mention the U.S. Open.
Oh.
Also.
What was that? Tennis?
What was that?
Was it tennis?
Get serious, Ronj. It was tennis. Hey, a lot of dignitaries were there. The president was at the final. But a lot of sports. I am officially old. I fell asleep before the end of the Chiefs game.
Wow.
And I also,
on a Friday night?
Yeah. I also fell asleep before the end of the Bills game, but not as bad as what our producer did.
But listen, let me just say quickly that the beginning of the NFL season has been it was a good weekend.
It was a great
weekend. And I know that it's St. Louis and we're supposed to hate the NFL because they spurned us. But St. Louis does not. St. Louis.
We love the NFL.
As a city, still consumes the NFL in a very big way. It's comparably to some of the other great NFL cities that have actual teams. St. Louis watches and they listen to football. They pay attention. So this city still loves it.
And a lot of people are dedicated. Except.
They are.
Except.
Me?
For Matt Pajeski.
Matt Pajeski.
What happened, Matt?
I have no respect.
Well.
I was at the Shamrock Pub last night. That's the unofficial Buffalo Bills.
You should have been home working on the show.
that's why we're scrambling this morning. If you see poor quality product, it's because Matt
had a bucket of
Labatt
Blue.
Yeah. Matt had the Canadian flu last night. Yeah.
Well, Scott Jago got me hooked on the Shamrock Pub for Bills games because that's where the local Buffalo Bills fans go to meet. For
great
the game.
Time, by the way.
It
Shamrock
is awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah. The place was packed. It was good to see the regulars again that I had met last year, because last year was the first year
I
had met.
Was it Buffalo John or something?
Buffalo Steve.
Buffalo Steve, that's it. There's a guy named Buffalo Steve that hangs out there.
Yeah. I love it.
And they're intense. And then, great game. It was back and forth. And then my buddies and I left in the fourth quarter before we saw the heroic comeback from the Bills. And I feel really bad.
For people who don't pay attention or did not pay attention, last night was literally one of the great regular season comebacks ever. in football. They had a win probability, the Buffalo Bills, with about 8.5 minutes to go. The win probability was 1.1%. They came back and did it. And Josh Allen threw for like 251 yards or something in the fourth quarter alone. It was literally one of the best comebacks in the history of the sport in the regular season. So that happened late last night. Mm-hmm. If you weren't watching, or if you were and then went to bed because you thought it was over, you missed out because that was a great finish.
Matt, are you a little surprised at yourself because you're not a leave early kind of guy?
Yeah.
That's not you. It goes against your grain.
I was surprised at myself and a little disappointed, and I'm very sorry that I'm sorry to my buddies who I made leave early too.
Can you imagine the euphoria of that bar?
I know. Oh. But it started clearing out though. I mean, it was not as packed as it was for kickoff, obviously. I mean, people were kind of getting the notion that they were going to lose, and it was getting ugly.
People left the stadium.
Yeah.
Bills fans left the stadium.
Wow.
So this is it's a lesson in don't leave games early ever.
Like the game six, the David Freeze ever. Game six. People were trying to get back into the stadium.
Yeah, don't ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's a big game. You know, you've got the Bills and the Ravens. That's a huge matchup. Don't ever leave the stadium early.
Is there anything worse, though, than just pushing through, barreling through, and staying up late? I mean, I've done this with overtime games. It's 1 a.m, 2 a.m, and then your team loses, and now you're tired and sad.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the worst.
Well, things like that can happen to you. You know, you got to power through. You have to deal with the tired. That's what comes with it. You could be like me, leaving that first ever Field of Dreams game early and missing the walk-off amazing home run to win it. You could be Kirk Gibson. Remember Kirk Gibson in the World Series against the A's? And he hit that amazing home run. And you could see in the distance the taillights of the car that was driving away in the parking lot and could tell something big was happening. And they stopped their car like, oh, damn it, we missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just great stuff. So we have Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, retired U.S. Army. And he is going to be with us. He's been at the station all morning. And he's going to join us when we come back on KMOX.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Ronji, Amy Markscore is with you, and we are joined in studio by retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. You've heard him on KMOX. He's a national security consultant for CBS. He is all over the place on the radio as the expert across the country, and he joins us now. I know you were on a bit earlier this morning on Total Information AM with Megan Lynch, so thank you so much for sticking around Studio B for a bit longer.
Always a great pleasure to be at KMOX.
All right, we've got a lot to get into, and I know, again, you were talking with Megan about so many of these topics around the world, but let's start here in the United States. Over the weekend, a renaming of the Department of Defense to the Department of War. This kind of took me by surprise. Didn't know this was going to happen. Would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think it took everybody by surprise, Amy, a little bit, because, you know, of all the things we have to worry about right now, we have a war in Ukraine. We have a war in Gaza. We just got done doing a major military operation against Iran. We've now done an airstrike against boats in the Caribbean. We're talking about sending troops to major cities. And the leadership of the nation can spend time worrying about what name should be slapped on the stationery at the Pentagon. It does not exactly sound like the top issue of the day. Furthermore, it seems to me that it shows a lack of understanding of how this all came about. You know, during World War II, there was a Department of War. That's true. But it really was the Department of the Army because it consisted of the Army and the Army Air Corps because the Air Force didn't exist. Because there was also a Department of the Navy. And then in 1949, with the National Security Act of 1949, we create the Department of Defense and the separate departments, Army, Navy, Air Force, at that time. I think a lot of the reason it was done, back to your point, what does it say about, what does it mean, was we had just ended this terrible war, World War II, and it concluded with the use of atomic weapons. and a strong belief at that time that the next war would begin with the use of atomic weapons. And there was a dramatic increase in the number of nuclear weapons in the 60s and 70s and 80s, to the point that at one time we had 30 to 40,000 nuclear weapons. We don't have that many now. But that's what it was all about. So the whole idea that war was going to end up being nuclear and was going to be catastrophic, the idea was we need to think about how we defend and deter war as opposed to necessarily prosecuting it. I think John Kennedy said, you know, if we don't end war, war is going to end us. So that was kind of the message. And so there's a real question, since it was done legally as a, you know, an act by Congress, law by Congress, creating the Department of Defense, the president, my interpretation at least, does not have the authority to change that absent congressional legislation. Now, I think the executive order says Secretary of Defense will pursue whatever required to do all this. But it sends a message, and I think the message, in combination with other things, the military operation, for example, against this small boat in the Caribbean. Again, nobody cries if this is full of fentanyl and these are drug dealers. But at the same time, what is the legal authority to do that? Not sure what it is. Nobody seems to be able to tell me what the legal authority is. The president's in the midst of pulling back several billion dollars in foreign aid. We've ended USAID. We've ended Radio Free Europe. We've ended Radio Liberty. So a lot of the thinking that was integrating our national security strategy about soft power, trying to influence countries and regions through that, as well as hard power, being ready to go to war if required, but war is the last thing we do, that's all going away. And now it's becoming, I think, with this message and all the other things associated with it, we're moving towards a strategy which, no, war is one of the is what we're going to do. This is all transactional, and we're going to use military power where we see appropriate, whether anybody else in the world likes it or not, whether it fits with international norms or not. That's what we're going to do. And that is the message, sadly, I think, is being conveyed. And this is just, you know, an example of that, along with other policies that are being pursued.
Is it sort of incompatible with how the president ran on being an anti-war president, that they changed the name here? Or does it really matter?
Well, I think all the presidents, you know, I got to understand, if you go after World War II, every president, through Ronald Reagan and Herbert Walker Bush, had all served in the military, and most of them had served in the war. So that was their personal experience. Okay, Eisenhower, of course, is being the classic example. So I think that influenced their thinking to a degree. And furthermore, they ran on, you know, at least an effort to keep us out of war. Many of them were unable to do that by circumstance. But clearly that's what the American people want. The American people, again, my interpretation, see war as the ultimate last thing that you do. And having been involved in several, I can guarantee you anybody that thinks there's any glory in this has never been there.
When you talked about soft power and kind of eliminating those avenues of soft power, I know months ago when the government was eliminating USAID, and how that is a form of soft power. If you have countries who are desperate, either China can give them a bunch and food and aid, and they can be beholden to China or Russia, or we can give them food and aid and they might have better feelings towards us. That type of soft power approach, is there something of a disdain for that in this administration? Even changing the name. No, we're going to be the aggressors here.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of saying it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of effort. It's a waste of resources. So we're not going to do it. But again, I think I happen to agree with you that if we don't fill that space, one of two things are going to happen. It's going to be disastrous for some of these particular countries. We will see, for example, I just talked to some colleagues involved in aid in Africa. We will see a dramatic increase in AIDS across the continent of Africa, to the detriment of thousands, if not millions, of people. We've gone down from hundreds of people in USAID operating in countries all across Africa to now the entire USAID, what left of it, providing aid and assistance for the continent of Africa, is 12 people. And the Chinese will fill that particular void, I guarantee it, in terms of economic assistance, in terms of providing port facilities and new highways, et cetera, and influence. And we're going to see here in a few weeks when the United Nations General Assembly comes together, the Chinese line, which they're talking about a lot, they talked about it during their recent speeches during their celebration of the end of World War II, that China is the, you know, legal power is, you know, follows international norms. China is the country that actually looks out for the rest of the world, you know, is beneficial to the rest of the world, follows international agreements, follows international law, and tries to portray the United States really as the outlier, but the United States is the outlier. The United States is the hegemon. The United States is the aggressor. And unfortunately, I think some of these policies actually validate that in the eyes of a lot of people. If you travel, particularly in South America or Latin America or Africa or Southeast Asia, it validates that particular perception.
So how does that weaken us then? If it becomes a situation where worldwide, outside of the United States, or maybe our immediate allies, China is seen as the power, the world power that's helping all of these countries as opposed to us?
Well, I think it hurts us in a number of ways. It hurts us perhaps economically in terms of trade relationships, and we're having enough trouble now as well with, of course, the whole tariff issues. And then you got to remember, as Winston Churchill once said, you know, the only thing worse than fighting a war with allies is fighting a war without allies. And if you get into a conflict, it's not only what they can contribute to you sometimes in terms of material force, ships and airplanes, tanks, soldiers, what they can provide you in terms of basing and location and geography. And if you think about a conflict with the Chinese, for example, frankly, your ability to take advantage of territory and use that for base to conduct operations in the Pacific region because of the vast nature of the Pacific region, it's critically important to successful military operations. And many of those smaller countries in that region, for example, will play great benefits. And then if you look into the future, where is going to be the biggest growth in population and perhaps economics in the next 30, 40 years? It's probably going to be Africa. That's where you're going to see dramatic growth, particularly in population. Natural resources of Africa are enormous. And so, you know, having good relations with those countries seems to me have great national security benefits potentially, as well as great economic benefits.
Speaking of fighting wars and with allies, we know that over the past couple of days, Russia launched its largest attack on Ukraine since the beginning of the war. Where are we with that? How do you see this ending?
Yeah, well, I don't see it ending, sadly, anytime soon. And unfortunately, despite the fact the president met with Putin there in Alaska, there's no indication by their actions or their words that Mr. Putin is at all interested in moving towards any type of a ceasefire, or any type of negotiation, despite the fact that the president said, oh, we're going to have a meeting with Putin and Zelensky, and then we'll have a trilateral with me, and that there's no possibility right now. That seems to be on the horizon. But you're quite right. You know, the evening of 6 September, a couple days ago, they launched 823 total projectiles that night. Over 800 drones were launched against Ukraine. And we've seen a massive uptick by the Russians in drones and missile activity. Think about this. In July of 2024, the Russians launched about 500 drones across that month against Ukraine. In July of 2025, they launched 6,000 drones across that month. It's very clear the Russians, in terms of production and strategy, are moving towards launching 1,000 drones a day at targets in Ukraine. And then many times, in terms of missile or drone strikes, what they will do is so-called two-tap strikes. And a two-tap strike is you hit something, particularly a civilian target, and then you wait about a half an hour or 40 minutes and you hit exactly the same target a second time. Why do you do that? To take out the firemen, the first responders, the ambulance crew who show up 30 minutes later to try to recover and help all those who have been injured. So the Russians are doing that. They deny, of course, that they're attacking civilian targets, but that's totally untrue. On the battlefield, things are relatively static. The Russians have gained some terrain and some villages and towns at a very, very small rate. But they're suffering right now somewhere around 1,000 casualties a day. Russians have suffered over 1 million casualties in Ukraine, probably 100,000 to 200,000 dead. Russians have now suffered more casualties in the war in Ukraine than the United States suffered in World War I. So the real question is, can they sustain that over time? And we're seeing some signs of the Russian economy starting to have problems. The Ukrainians have been striking energy targets deeply into Russia, which have resulted in gas rationing in some degrees in Moscow right now, and high increases in inflation as well as interest rates. On the other hand, the Ukrainians, of course, are having their own manpower difficulties. So the real question ultimately will be whether or not the West, and it seems like the United States will abstain, will the West continue to provide military assistance to Ukraine in trying to, you know, thwart this particular aggression by the Russian Federation?
Colonel Jeff McCausland with us in studio. We love having you come in. So anytime you get an opportunity, you should come see us, because it's great to have you.
My great pleasure. Really a lot of fun.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, retired U.S. Army with us, also national security consultant for CBS, joining us here in studio on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
25 years, Amy, of the Great Rivers Greenway. They're celebrating that here in 2025. And to talk about that with us and what is going to happen next, tell us more about the Great Rivers Greenway. Big part of the St. Louis area is Emma Clues, Vice President of Communications and Outreach for Great Rivers Greenway. Good to talk to you today, Emma. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we are excited to have you with us. And so this 25th anniversary, the celebration you're having, what all goes into that?
Okay. How much time do you have?
Well, we have 1 minute.
No, we're excited to celebrate with the community. We have, you know, together as a region, we've accomplished so much. So the biggest thing that's coming up is 1 week from today, on Monday, September 15th, we will have a giant community dinner table, 1,500-foot table around the Missouri History Museum. We're shutting down the whole street. We'll have a giant community dinner. You can bring your own food or you can purchase from food trucks on site. We'll have a local DJ, mini cupcakes from Sweetheart, free for everyone, fun activities, and it's just a great way to celebrate and connect with each other.
That's awesome. I love this idea of connecting, because that is what the Greenway does. We were at Session Taco in the Central West End, and Deb was very active with the Greenway. She's making it her goal to walk every single mile of the Greenway. And I think people a lot of times might be on the Greenway without realizing it, because it, yes, there are the distinct paths, but then it also cuts through the city. And I'm trying to think of a day when I'm not on the Greenway at some point, because it really does. It doesn't just take you through beautiful areas like the Al Foster Trail through the woods. It also cuts through where people work and eat and live and play, which is so awesome.
Absolutely. We want them to be a way of life for people, where they can use them to commute or to get where they're going, or just, you know, take a break and take a walk over their lunch hour, or have that bigger excursion maybe on a weekend and really, you know, get into nature. However you want to use them, they're there for you.
So what about expansion of the Great Rivers Greenway? I know there's always talk of doing stuff like that. What could be coming next in the years ahead?
Yes, we have lots in construction right now. Brookline Greenway on Market Street, as well as North Grand, are both in construction. We're working on the Maylene and St. Vincent Greenways here in the next couple of months. And we're also working on an extension or connection between Deer Creek Greenway and River to Pear Greenway. So those will be linked together. Gosh, there's just dozens of projects, but those are a couple that are in the immediate future.
I know you mentioned the name of the greenways, but the Greenway in Chesterfield or the Greenway, in South St. Louis, are those areas going to be, which ones are going to be connected soonest, if that makes sense? I know I was somewhere in Chesterfield and someone goes, it won't be long before this connects to that. And I'm having a hard time keeping track of what's going to be connected soon.
Yes, it is a big area. So we serve St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and St. Charles County. So it's 1,200 square miles. No big deal, just like 120 towns getting together on the same page. And so there is a lot of different projects going on. So in Chesterfield, we have the Missouri Greenway, which is along the Monarch Chesterfield levee. So if you can picture behind some of the outlet malls and by the factory and that entertainment district. So actually, the city of Chesterfield is working on an extension to be able to connect two of those segments together. And then that also connects across the Boone Bridge with 6440 to be able to connect to the Katy Trail and the Bush Greenway on the St. Charles County side.
So the Brookline Greenway is something we've heard a lot about, which would connect, if I'm not mistaken, it would connect Forest Park to the Arch. Is that how that would
and
work?
Yes, Fairground Park to Tower Grove Park, north, south, east, and west.
What is the timeline for something like that? Because it seems like a huge undertaking, and it would be very, very cool to be able to do that.
Yes, it is huge. It is happening. So we have two segments built, two are in construction, two partner connectors. The city is working on the Tower Grove connector along Tower Grove Avenue and Van Deventer, as well as 20th Street. And altogether, it's 10 miles of greenways plus 3.5 miles of partner connectors, and it will all be done in 2030. So just 5 more years.
Five more. How many miles, total is that, will be done by 2030?
That is 13.5 miles, including the partner connector projects from the city.
Now, right now, the Gateway Greenway is about 140 miles. And
correct.
You guys are aiming for 600 miles in the long term. Stupid question, but do you have all 600 miles dreamed out?
Great question, and no, not exactly.
Okay.
So there is a general overall plan that people help to inform. We update our strategic plan every 5 years with community input, and so much of the region has changed, you can imagine, since we first started that plan in 2005. So, you know, for instance, St. Charles County looked very different than it did in 2005. We recently redid, again, with the municipalities and all of the community members there, redid that plan. So we don't know exactly what it will look like, but we do know that the community will continue to tell us what are their priorities.
So obviously we're focusing now on expansion and how many miles you have. But obviously with expansion comes a greater and growing upkeep. And what I've noticed, whether I am running Grant's Trail or I'm out in Wildwood at Al Foster and the zombie trails, I'm amazed by how well the trails are kept up and the signs are fresh and things are clean. Are you guys constantly growing to be able to maintain all of the trails that you're building?
This is a major kudos for our partners. Everything we do is in partnership. So we help to build the greenway with whatever community members or partners are in the area. But then we do have the day-to-day maintenance is primarily taken care of by partners like a municipality or Missouri State Parks or St. Louis County Parks. So shout out to those partners that are taking care of those day-to-day. We help and support them with trainings and volunteers and vendors and our staff. For instance, we do take care of all of the signage replacement ourselves. But the day-to-day, mowing the grass, fixing a pothole, things like that, are really from all of those hundreds of partners that we work with.
Good Lord, my microphone's not working. When COVID happened, people went outside because they were looking for something to do, and it did occur at a time where the weather was starting to get warmer. And so there was a lot of outdoors, and I know that visits to the Greenway jumped considerably. Have they stayed at about that level or close to it since then?
They have, actually. We went from about 2 million visits a year to about 3 million visits a year, and that has sustained. People really told us time and again that these went from being perhaps in their minds as a nice to have to a need to have. People are really recognizing the value in their everyday lives. I think at the height of the lockdown in particular, we heard from people that, maybe they live alone and they were feeling very stagnant and isolated, and this was one of the only ways they could safely feel a part of community and taking care of their mental health and emotional health and, moving as well as their physical health, obviously. But then we also heard from people who were perhaps trapped at home with lots of folks, and this was the only way to get some alone time and needed a little bit of respite and a chance to maybe slow down or connect to nature. So again, the greenways are here for people no matter how they use them, but we're thrilled to see that usage staying and actually growing. We really are seeing lots of visits on the greenways, which is incredibly encouraging.
I can't say enough about the Great Rivers Greenway, and no matter what town you're in St. Louis, I feel like that's the thing. We're an area known for being really, I feel like, sectioned off, bifurcated, right? We're not necessarily the most pedestrian friendly area because St. Louis County is so spread out, and St. Louis City and St. Charles County. And we all have our, like, Kirkwood and Wildwood and South County. We have our own vibe. But the Great Rivers Greenway really connects all of us more than anything else. And I feel like that's something that's easy to take for granted. When I travel and I'm trying to find a trail, sometimes I'll go to a town and they go, yeah, well, we have this paved part for like a mile that's great, or a part over here, but you got to cross a highway. To have this many miles of connected trails is actually pretty extraordinary.
Thank you. And it is really unique. It's something that, plenty of cities and towns around the world are doing this kind of work, but not in the same way that we are. So to have people vote to create this in the year 2000, that's the anniversary that we're celebrating, really came from community engagement. That is what people value here. And so we're thrilled to have the honor of delivering this back to the community and with the community. And you're exactly right about all of those you know, both real and perceived boundaries and barriers,
yes,
right? Sometimes
right.
it's a river, sometimes it's a highway, sometimes it's a ward or a city line or a neighborhood. But the greenways don't care. The greenways right. transcend all of those things. And what is really thrilling to see also is that the process by which we are building these greenways, because it's in collaboration, sometimes those neighboring towns or neighborhoods or you know, different groups are maybe working together for the first time, even mm-hmm. though they're quite close to each other, to be able to work on the greenway. And then lots of other interesting things come out of them knowing each other better and strengthening that collaborative muscle.
For more information on it, greatriversgreenway.org. And as we say goodbye here, Emma, is there something about Great Rivers Greenway you would like people to know? Maybe they don't.
You know, the greenways are for everyone. So most people are walking. Some people like to run, maybe ride a bike, push a stroller, roll a wheelchair. So even if you just want to go sit on a bench and eat your lunch or, you know, get some fresh air, however you use the greenways, they're there for you. And we would love to hear your stories, your questions. Contact us anytime.
GreatRiversGreenway.org is the website. Emma Clues, Vice President of Communications and Outreach. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. We'll see you at dinner next Monday.
Love it.
Awesome. 25 years. 25 cool. years.
And I love what Em was saying at the end there. The accessibility of the greenways is yeah. really important. Whether you are walking, running, rolling a wheelchair or a stroller, that's also something that's so important that anybody and everybody can use them.
Love to get that Forest Park to the Arch connection going. That'd be really something.
That's going to be so yeah. fun. That's going to be like one of the busiest ones, I think, because people will be excited to do that route.
Did you see this? Coming up next on the Chris and Amy Show, 104.1 FM KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Ronj, I went to the Clayton Art Fair this weekend. Okay. Love the Clayton Art Fair. It's a tradition. I think I've been going to the Clayton Art Fair for 20 years. Over 20 years. Matt Pajeski, you know our producer over there, Matt?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
What about him?
So I texted him because it's close to where he lives, and I thought, my buddy Matt might be here. He wasn't there. And because he wasn't there, do you know what he missed?
What?
There were some... Okay, they were not in a booth. They were just visiting. There were some furries visiting.
Okay.
I think they might have been a couple of BDSM furries.
Oh! Oh, really?
I think so.
What?
I didn't want to stare because
that?
Art's for everyone. But, well, at first I thought maybe they were like mascots. But they weren't mascots.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you're a furry, you might have a head that looks like a mascot.
Okay.
Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's my second thought. So they were just visiting, Arts for Everyone. Those looked like expensive outfits. That can't be cheap. They were
furry
very
outfits?
Well made.
How like, did you know they were BDSM?
Well, one of them, maybe just one of them was, had like a lot of leather and chains. Would that be it, maybe?
I know.
I mean, it could be.
Maybe they weren't. Maybe he was just grunge.
You know what? I want to talk
about...
You know
what? Maybe it's grunge. Maybe it was grunge, not BDSM.
I'd like to point out something different here.
Oh, my gosh.
Right before we started the segment, Amy goes to us, can I talk about furries? Do you think that's okay?
Well,
like, what do you think this is? A violation
well,
of some kind?
Well, yeah, I don't...
The stuff that you think is filthy, like, is...
Well, not that it's filthy,
like,
but...
FCC non-compliant is outrageous.
I didn't
want to
just be mean.
Oh.
Because it is very different.
Yeah,
it's a very different group.
So the slogan is "Art is for everyone." Is that what?
No. I was just saying that art's for everyone,
well,
man.
I don't believe that. It's for most people, but not for BDSM furries.
Why not?
Yeah,
they were pretty young. They looked like maybe
since
in their.
Since when are you the keeper of art?
I'm the keeper of all art.
You didn't even go.
It's because those furries were there.
You didn't even know about
He's like,
it.
Matt's like, that's it. I'm out. But here's the thing. It was like a younger. They were maybe like early 20s or something. But I had seen furries. I've definitely seen furries where it's just the tail.
Yeah.
But this was, I mean, this was the head.
Yeah.
And then a tail. But they don't wear body. It's not the bottom half of the mascot.
It's just the head.
It's just the head okay. and then like a tail and then outfits. And I don't know. But one guy took his head off, which I feel like you got to commit.
Yeah.
You're either a furry or you're not. You can't take your head off.
I agree with you. Amy, did you see any of the NFL red zone over the weekend? Yesterday?
Well, I didn't listen to it, but I saw some of it, yes. It stresses me out to listen to red zone.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right, because yes. you don't like when they talk over the
that's
announcers.
Right.
So NFL red zone is the show that you can watch, and it's sort of a whip around show. If a team's about to score in a game, they go to that game and they're like, oh, they're in the red zone, and they show you the scoring plays. Anyway, for years, Scott Hansen, the host of the show, would open by saying 7 hours of commercial free football is next. Well, it's no longer commercial free. So over the weekend, they did start to put in ads. Now, they were in 15-second increments, and it wasn't very many of them. It's something like 2 total minutes worth of advertising during NFL Red Zone with about 420 minutes of programming. So not that big of a deal, but it is no longer commercial free, which leads me to apps like Netflix and like Hulu, where you pay a service. You pay for the service and you think, okay, well, I'm paying you, so I'm paying you for no ads. Well, now they all have ads. So if I have to pay for a subscription, I would like for everything to be commercial free. Why is that too much to ask?
Because,
and I know I could pay more, but if I'm paying anything at all, that is the transaction here, right? This is why radio is free, because we give you advertising. Totally free for you, though, right? So if you pay us, we'll stop having ads.
I think that's illegal. Maybe during just our show.
I mean, pay us like individually.
Oh, okay.
I mean, pay the station.
I'll rip up this live read right now if you send me cash.
Right, send us money and we will stop throwing advertising.
No, I get what you're saying. And that, you know what that means? That means the people, either the shareholders or the CEOs, they are raking in the dough.
They sure are.
Because you are getting subscription money and you're getting advertisers' money. In general, that's a lot of money that you are just raking in.
It's obnoxious.
We're also going to talk about this later. I believe we're talking about it actually in the next hour, in the 10 o'clock hour. But I imagine people did see this, that the Powerball drawing was on Saturday, and there were two winning tickets. One winning ticket was sold in Texas, and the other winning ticket was sold in Missouri.
How about that?
So here's the thing. We want to, Texas has revealed where the winning ticket was sold. Missouri has not yet. I believe they cannot yet for some reason. They're figuring something out. But they will reveal where it was sold. We want to hear from you. Which gas station do you think sold the winning ticket? Do you think it was that 7-Eleven in Rock Hill on Manchester? Do you think it was that random gas station off of Highway 100 in Grace Summit? Do you think it was in Poplar Bluff? Do you think it was in Kansas City? You can give us the town. We would love the specific coordinates of the gas station.
Use the voice messaging feature on the Odyssey app to do that.
Or you can text us 314-436-7900. We want your guess. Because here's the thing. The question is, I know people... Okay, so there's a gas station in Kirkwood, and the attendant says when she buys tickets... lottery tickets, she always drives out far in the country because she doesn't think that tickets are sold in the populated areas.
Yeah, that's just not how that works.
Well,
also, you remember during COVID, they would test the wastewater just to see where COVID was, like what neighborhoods it was all happening in, where the concentration was. Apparently, they do that with things like cocaine. They test wastewater for cocaine because this story from the New York Post that Nantucket. You aware of Nantucket Island?
Yeah.
It is 50% higher cocaine levels than the rest of the country.
There was a woman from Nantucket.
So Nantucket in Massachusetts, where there's a lot of money, that part of the country, they tested, their town tested their wastewater, and they found cocaine levels much, much higher than everywhere else in the United States. I didn't know they did. Why would they do that? It seems like a... like, why would you spend the money for that?
Well,
you just want to know how much coke's in the area?
I think it's in the limerick. The old man from Nantucket.
Who, you need to think about this one before you get us in serious trouble. Think about it during the break. We'll talk about it when we come back. Hour 2 of 3 is next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.